powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
All right, you guys, happy Thursday. And it is a very exciting Thursday because you had another stellar start from a Mariners pitcher. You know, people just have it all. People that just have it all.
Now, a couple.
The Mariners don't have it all. They could use some offense. We're going to get to that at 10:30. But oh my gosh, Bryce Miller.
Oh my goodness.
Oh my goodness.
1-2 from Miller. Swing and a miss. He's striking him out. Got him at 94, top of the zone. And Miller with a nice easy Texas stroll heads back to the first base dugout.
This kid is absolutely unreal. Through five starts this year, Bump, he's gone six or more innings pitched in each start, has allowed four hits or fewer in each appearance, and is the first pitcher to do so since 1901. I was just a child.
It's 122 years ago, Stacy.
Yeah, I know.
That's radio math. I'm good with that.
Wow.
I'm good with that.
Wow.
Yeah. And what I liked about the young man, he threw 90 pitches. 73 of them things was fastballs. He goes, look, man, if they ain't going to touch it, I'm just going to keep throwing it. And I go back to that first start he had against the A's where he had 10 Ks, relied heavily on the fastball. Then a couple starts later, he had to throw in some breaking balls and mix some things up. So now I'm putting myself in the A's shoes and like, what's going to happen here? How is he going to attack us? We know he has a fastball. He's got some other stuff too. Mm-hmm. He goes, no, I'm just better than y'all. I'm going to throw the heater and you're not going to touch it. The confidence that he has on the mound is fun to see. And if I were to create a picture, I think it would probably look like Bryce Miller. Like the stash, the hair.
Everything, all the pieces.
The height, the
just
thin.
The stash, too?
I kid you not. I played golf with a young man. His name was Colby. And you get to know guys on the golf course. Three or four holes in, I go, you played baseball, didn't you? Mm. I go, you were a pitcher, weren't you? He goes, yeah, how'd you know? I go, dude, you're tall, you're lanky, you got long hair,
vibe.
You got a stash. And that's when I see Bryce, I see a pitcher. And it's fun to watch. And it's encouraging because you look at this staff and you're thinking, man, the future is bright.
Yeah. I have a question, by the way, not to take us off the rails.
All right.
Did you not know Colby until you went golfing? Like, do people who sometimes golf just show up and randomly get a tee, like a group together?
Yeah. So I typically try to go out there with at least one other person. So there's two more slots.
Oh,
so you can get
paired
up. I've been paired up with the worst people in the world, but I've been
like
paired
horrible
up with
at golf.
No, I don't care if you're horrible at golf.
Oh, so some of them are just
some
like,
just like
I don't want to spend
people.
Time with
like,
them.
I'm going to spend 4 hours with this guy.
God.
Yeah, it's tough sometimes.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
But then it's like Call of Duty, but you're on the golf course.
Yeah, on the golf course.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, I get it now. Bryce Miller, he allowed just two hits through six innings, pitched, walked just one, struck out six in an absolutely phenomenal day. Here's Scott Servais on the young ace.
There's going to be some adjustments he's going to need to make along the way. Yeah. The more teams get to see him and you know, the book gets on him a little bit more. But, you know, if it ain't broke, you don't fix it. Yeah. And the results are outstanding. The thing that has not changed at all is just obviously the confidence he has. When he takes the mound, he is in total control. It's about as slow as heartbeat you're ever going to see from a young starting pitcher, and it serves him well. I think, you know, there's going to be nights that he's going to have to lean on the off-speed pitches a little bit more, but really good so far.
You know, it really is wild. It really is wild the depth the Mariners have with not just bullpen arms, starting with starters. I mean, you brought up Kirby, you brought up Logan. Kirby's looking like an all-star. Logan is great. You lose a former Cy Young Award winner in Robbie Ray, and you bring up a rookie a little earlier than you might have wanted to, and lo and behold, he has the lowest whip through a pitcher's first five starts ever in MLB history.
Embarrassment of riches.
Really?
With these arms, man. It's so fun to see. And then the main point is that they're young. Right, you still have Robbie Ray. Once he gets healthy, he comes back. He's going to hold it down. You still got Castillo, who is older, not an old guy, but older. But then you're anchored by these young guys, man. And that's what makes it so exciting, because you're saying the experience that they're gaining now is going to show up years from now. Like the confidence that they have now, it's the starting point of their confidence is what makes me excited, because they hit the mound from day one, like they belong here. There's no question about it. There's no nervousness. They're themselves. And the Mariners have done a great job developing these guys and allowing them to be exactly who they are. So I start to look towards the future and say, man, if these guys continue to progress the way that they are and the way they have been, I don't see too many other staffs out there that can hang with this bunch of guys right now.
No, they're already tied for first with Toronto in quality starts this year. I think 27 right now. Curtis, you were there in person watching Miller.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
It was fun.
It was, yeah. That fastball of his has some serious life to it. I mean, you don't get as great of a feel watching it on TV as you do in person. Like, it's fun watching him on TV, sure, but, like, to be there and to see him work and just to see him mow down the Oakland lineup again, I mean, it was special last night.
That's another thing. I'm glad that you mentioned to mow down the Oakland lineup again because I saw MLB's Twitter account Bump post his stats up, and they were like, you know, lowest whip through pitchers first five starts, first pitcher since 1901 to go six plus in each time and allow four hits or fewer. They had all these stats up, and people were like, it's against the A's. First of all, he did not have five starts against the A's. He also did it against the Astros. I don't care if they didn't have Jose Altuve. He did it against the Astros, and he did it against the Braves. So I don't know who's looking down their nose at that lineup. Man. And he also did it in a second time around with the A's. And Curtis, as you pointed out, a team that by then, as bad as they are, knew what to expect
You've
with
seen
him.
Seen him once prior.
Exactly. Which does add to the challenge of it. And he's still doing it. You cannot take away from what he's doing, even if you try.
You can't. If you do, you a hater. And
you
that's
are
fine.
A hater, and that's
cool.
Okay. We, you know, we welcome all people.
We embrace haters
that's
here.
That's exactly
it's
right.
It's all good. You look at his starts, right? Two runs, three runs, four runs, two. You look at his, hits. That was the hits I was talking about there. Then you look at his home runs, none. His walks, three. His Ks, 28. I mean, you look at this, the stat line, this is one of a seasoned veteran who's poised to be an all-star and be in the Cy Young conversation. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not putting all that on this young man now. I'm just saying, when you look at if you didn't have a name, and you just had one of those silhouettes before you unlock the main character in a video game. You just have the silhouette, you see the numbers, you go, man, that's Cy Young type of stuff right there.
Yeah.
So it's nice that he's starting off on the right foot. There are going to be days where it doesn't work for him. We just haven't seen that yet. So we're going to react to what we've seen so far, which has been just complete dominance by the young fellow.
Also, yes, we're not putting him in the Cy Young conversation. I absolutely agree with you. But what you're saying is, like, man, does he look like he can be an ace? Like, this is ace stuff. We've only seen it in five starts, but it's fair to be really excited about what he could be is what you're saying. This from Sarah Langs. She said that Bryce Miller's five consecutive outings of six plus innings pitched and five or fewer base runners, because that's also another stat I forgot to include. He's had five or fewer base runners in all of those. She said it's one outing shy of tying the longest such streak since 1901, held at six by, just some casual names in here, 2022 Jacob DeGrom. What did he ever become? 2016 Clayton Kershaw. Just some guys. I know, just some bums, right? I mean, these are like, this is good company. Good company you want to be with. So it's really, really cool to see. I don't think you can take anything away from it, even if this outing was against the A's. Like we said, it was the second outing against the A's, and he's also done it against two great staffs. The Mariners also got the win. I didn't even mention that yet, by the way, in case anyone didn't know. The Mariners won. Pretty important that I tell you that. That's in part thanks to, how about Sam Haggerty with a two-run double?
The stretch and the left-hander's 2-0 pitch. Swing and a line drive down the left field line. It's a fair ball into the corner. Cal will score. Caballero running third. He'll score. Around to third goes A.J. Pollock. The throw in from Blade is cut off by Diaz. Sam Haggerty slams a double into the left field corner. The Mariners get a couple, and they have the lead 2-0 here in the bottom of the fourth on a clutch base hit from Sam Haggerty.
It was a big fourth inning for this team. And Bump, it was also really good to, once again, I do not care that it's the A's, okay? What do you want to say? We can't, like, wait to analyze until it's the Yankees at the end of this homestand
here.
No,
we can't do a show until they play the Yankees.
Yeah, we can't be like, hey, we'll talk to you guys on May 31st, okay? We'll see you next week. So it is against the A's. We know that. But it sure was good to see Julio with an RBI single again.
Yeah, nice to see Julio kind of work his thing out. I think he did strike out three times. But you know what? I'm going to focus on the positive, and that's just seeing Julio make solid contact with the ball and driving a run, man. And also, there's some things that happened. Our guy, Caballero, was back in the game. Love to see it. Didn't like him being pulled. I think he got pulled, right, by for our guy Wong. But Caballero's out there doing his thing. Yeah, Kelnick got a rough day.
He moved over to third base.
Moved over to third. Thank you, sir.
Suarez, yeah.
Thank you, Suarez. But nice to see Caballero out there. Wong was out there. He had 1K, one at bat, didn't get any contact on the ball. But yeah. These are the type of games. People now, I've seen people text in and say, well, it was a practice game or it was like a scrimmage. All right. When I was coaching and we lined up these scrimmages, right? Air quotes, scrimmages. These are actually real games that count towards your record. Mm-hmm. But if you call it a scrimmage, when I lined up and I set up these scrimmages, there we were still getting work in. There were still some things we needed to see. Guys were still battling for position.
Yeah.
Dudes were still trying to make an impression on the coaching staff and work on some stuff. So, yeah, you might say, okay, it was against the A's. Yes, it was. You're supposed to beat the A's. So you're doing what you're supposed to do, but you also need to see some things. You wanted to see second time around Bryce Miller against the A's. Have the A's figured them out? Of course not. You wanted to see Julio Rodriguez have some good at-bats. He's getting an RBI. You want to see Swaggerty, man, at first base, right? It's a foreign place for him. How's he going to do? He does good with his at-bat. So, yeah, I understand. I'm not going to sit here and say the Mariners are figured out. They are ready to go. But if the score was flipped and it was 6-1 Athletics, we'd be worried.
Yep, absolutely right. Some listener stuff here early, Bump. I'll throw you this one from JD in the 509. It's not a question. It's a statement from JD, but I just know you're going to agree. JD says, I'll tell you what, Jose Caballero just brings the energy, and I love it.
He's been
fun to watch.
He has been fun to watch.
From Nelson, he says, this one's somewhat related. He said, when Haggerty hit that double, not Caballero, when Haggerty hit that double, do you think Wong was thinking, time to pack my bags?
Man, Wong was thinking something. He's not comfortable. It's not opening day. It's not, I'm with this new team. I got a fresh start over here. I'm going to show people why they picked me up. He feels some pressure. You got Haggerty doing his thing, Caballero doing his thing. He has to feel it, and I think it shows up sometimes. Like, there was a play, a tough play he could have made at second base. Ends up not making a play, and the first thing I think about was, man, that's going to haunt him. Because I remember struggling at some point, and then you don't make a play that you know you're capable of making. In the back of your mind, you're like, all right, man, they're going to hold that against me. These youngsters are doing this, that, and the third. I need to do better. So mentally, I just hope Wong finds his peace and ends up making some plays when he's out there because I can only imagine the struggle that's going on with him.
From the 253, I didn't like service bringing Wong in for Caballero in the seventh. That was Gino Suarez had to be pulled from the game.
Suarez,
so they moved Caballero over to third.
Yeah, they
had
didn't
to bring,
pull
yeah.
Him.
Just as a heads up for that one. That was not like an automatic replacement. It was moving some stuff around because they had to bring Suarez out. And I think Pollock got a little banged up, too.
He did, too.
Yeah, so they had to move some stuff
Trammell
around.
Trammell out in the outfield.
Yeah. This one, love it. I don't care if it's against the A's, as the great Dom Toretto once said. It doesn't matter if you win by an inch or a mile. Winning is winning. A win against a bad team still counts in the W column.
One game above 500,
Look,
baby. Come on.
Hey.
Come on.
Hey. You know what we're looking for today, guys?
Two. A place we've never been this season.
A place
Two
we've
games
never
above 500.
Been. Can they do it?
Jamon.
Two games above 500, I absolutely believe. I don't even want to make a donut bet. They said it couldn't be done, but I think the Mariners can do it today. Will the Mariners do it today? What do you guys think? Yes?
Yeah,
yes? Everyone knows.
They'll do it today. I said they'd win 3 out of 4. I knew they were capable of sweeping.
You said 3 out of 4 would be a good series.
Yeah,
you didn't say
series.
I didn't think they could sweep.
Yeah, so they've already hit the mark, but the next mark is 2 games over .500. We need to make that happen.
That's exactly what it is you get to those 3, and then all of a sudden you're like, well, 3 isn't good enough. Wow.
Might as well.
Those 3 are quite easy.
Now you're like, well, I mean,
it's just one game now.
I've cleared most of the plate. Why not just, you know what I mean? Like, I've already had pizza today. Why not just have the slice of cake? Like, why not just go for game 4? That'd be great. Let's see if they can get to it today. If there ever was a game during this homestand, because, again, the Pirates aren't exceptional as a team. That offense is really struggling, but they have a great pitching staff. This is the game that you need. So you want to talk about how these games against the A's don't matter? Well, it matters when you head into a tougher series, especially at the end of this homestand against the Yankees, and you want to be able to have that extra win in your back pocket. This is when you get it today. Yeah. Logan Gilbert on the mound. So
close him out.
Yeah, it sounds weird to say big game here, May 25th against the A's. But these are the kind of wins that you want to stash. Like your little coin analogy the other day. You stash that change, and after a while, you got like 20 bucks in quarters.
Go to the coin star.
That's exactly what it is.
You dump that bucket in there.
My God.
You get dollars.
I forgot to tell you yesterday, a listener texted in when we were talking about that, and they said they had, this can't be right. That can't be right. But they said that they saved up $900 in change.
I believe it.
Wow.
I believe
$900 in change. That's like suitcases full of change.
No, you'd be surprised. You got a bunch
really?
Of quarters in there.
Damn.
But I think I've gone to Coinstar summertime. Moms didn't want to give me no money. I ran through my budget.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to those old Folgers.
Yeah.
Coffee
yes.
cans, whatever. Yeah. I used to put all my change in there. I went there one time and walked out with like 200, thought I was rich.
See, I've had a couple hundred before, and the worst part is when you're pouring it in, it's like and everyone in the grocery store is looking at you. Yeah, and they're like, wow,
yeah.
Look at this person. No shame in my change game. Let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacey.
Headline number one, Florida Panthers capping off their sweep of the Carolina Hurricanes with a dramatic goal. 4 seconds left in the game.
It's the post. Going back out in front of that is Kachuk, who scores!
Going to the Stanley Cup final where they await the winner of Dallas or Vegas. What's the real headline?
The team with the most improbable road to the finals might win it all. Now, if you're a hockey fan, you already know this. If you're not a huge NHL fan outside of the Kraken, or maybe you just haven't gotten into hockey yet, the reason we're talking about the Florida Panthers and the reason the Panthers are news is not just because they're one of two teams going to the Stanley Cup Finals, but they are the least likely team to get there. They were 3 points out of a playoff spot with 8 games to go. They clinched a spot only because two other teams, the Penguins and Sabres, lost the final few days of the season and overall spent the least amount of time in a playoff spot of any team, not just in this year's playoffs, but in the expansion era.
If just getting the playoffs was a team, this is the team right here. Just
yeah,
get in.
By the skin of your teeth.
And you never know what happens after that. What's great about this win is I helped my buddy win like $600. He goes, Bum, who should I go for? Look, I can't bet on games because of what I do, right? But I'm going to tell you, the Panthers are going to get it done, and they got it done. I love the, I feel like the NHL is the league as of late where anything can really happen.
Yeah.
Right? You got Vegas a few years ago doing their thing. You got the Kraken getting in this year, beating the
Bruins go out
the
early.
Champions. Bruins are out. You take Dallas to game 7. On the other side, you got the Panthers getting into the Stanley Cup Finals. Man, it's awesome to watch, man. I wonder how thick the Florida fan base is when it comes to the hockey.
Oh, man.
They've had their team for like 30 years.
Yeah, and they've gone to the playoffs for 4 seasons, but they've never been like super successful with it. They've had like long gaps of not making it to the playoffs. They went from like 1996.
This is their first Stanley Cup final trip since 96.
Exactly, and they hadn't won a playoff game until like 2 seasons ago or something like that.
Like 2021.
Yeah, early 90s.
Yeah. So they've done that thing of that we're kind of familiar with, where they'll have like, it's kind of like with the Mariners. They'll have like a stretch of 5 years where they're like, this is awesome. And then they'll go like a decade with like nothing, or in the Mariners' case, 2 decades. So they're a team that's easy to root for. They did show Mike McDaniel, obviously Miami Dolphins head coach, and he was banging the drum. That drum that they have there, that crowd looked fired up. So I think they have like a really diehard fan base. I don't know how big it is. Like, I don't think it's their biggest team. Certainly not the biggest team in Florida.
They have one of my favorite playoff traditions, though, where they throw toy rats out on the ice after goals.
That's weird.
It started because I think a player, like in the early 90s for them, saw a rat scurry across the locker room and killed it with his stick. And so they celebrate that.
I thought you were going to say somebody snitched.
Yeah,
from
right?
A rat.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
There was a rat that scurried across. He killed it with his stick. And so now they just throw toy rats at him.
Oh, nice. No.
After, what's the scenario? When do they throw it out there? Just after any goal?
I think it's either after wins or after goals.
It's got to be after wins. Imagine if it's after a goal and there's a response goal, or they need to be like stopped. Everyone stop with all these rats.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. What if they score 7 goals in a game? You got to have 7 rats. That's a lot of rats.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, the Patriots docked two OTA practices for rule violations. What's the real headline?
Oh, man, really hope they weren't being too physical at football practice. Now, it is easy to make fun of the Patriots, and I almost went that direction with headline rewrites. I want to say we do not know what the specific violation was. All we know is that today's OTA, in addition to another OTA next week for the Patriots, were taken away as part of a violation. But having experience with OTAs taken away for rule violations here in Seattle, I always do a little bit of an eye roll because sometimes it's just stuff where you're like, really? And it's part of the CBA. I get it. But
the players wanted this. They wanted practice to be nice and easy. It was the veterans, really, the guys who have like 8, 9, 10 years in the league. They're like, look, we got to take care of our bodies. No reason to be banging out there. When I was playing, we were still padded up, getting after it. I thought that was cool, right? I go to the CFL. In the CFL, you're not allowed to pad up for practice, and you're only allowed, the team is only allowed to force you to be in the facility for 4 hours throughout the day. 4 hours. So I'd get there around 8 o'clock, 7:30. I'd be gone by noon, 1 o'clock, and I had no idea what to do with my time. So you can make fun of the NFL because practices are soft. CFL's even softer.
Oh man, that's insane.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three. Some more crazy Pac-12 news. Former USC athletic director Mike Bone announced his surprise resignation last week. But it's since come to light he's been accused of fostering a hostile work environment while also regularly using racist and sexist language. Oh. What's the real headline?
He sounds like a bad dude, but he got brawny. The allegations, as detailed in a report from The Athletic, bump, making inappropriate comments about female colleagues, making unwanted physical contact with women. He said a colleague was only successful in athletics because she's an African-American woman. He challenged her knowledge of the position. He also said another colleague was only getting job interviews with other universities because he's black. Outside of that, there were questions about his like long-term ability to do his job and successfully recruit and rally. And it's like that he became less effective during COVID because he's so great at like firing people up in these in-person things, but wasn't actually great, kind of like failing upward. And and so there was stuff outside of these allegations about sexist, racist language that was also problematic.
When I hear and see things like this, I just think of Mad Men, the series.
Yeah.
And because they were moving recklessly. I'm like, do you really think you're going to be able to say and do all the things that you're doing?
Correct.
And no one is going to snitch on you? You should be throwing rats at whoever snitch. Actually, no, that's a good rat right there. You snitch on this man, you get Mike in trouble. But it's like, how do you think that this isn't going to catch up with you eventually? You know what I'm saying? I understand you have your group of friends, your group of boys who have your back or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But it's a different time. Information gets out there so quickly that you got to watch your back, man. And then I'm glad someone like this is exposed because that just shows you who he truly is as a person. Mm-hmm. Right? If you really care about people, you don't go around moving like this. This is not Mad Men. I'm glad he's gone. Let's see who they replace him
with. Also, he's being a little messy with it. Look, your girl watches a lot of reality TV. Even they aren't this messy. He complained about that employee who was a black woman to a black male employee who was a CFO. Right? And then complained.
He's like, am I right?
Yeah,
am
exactly.
Right?
And then.
He's like, nah, bro.
Yeah.
I'm snitching.
Then he told other people that black male CFO was only getting interviews with other universities because he was black. So it's like this person that you talk trash to, you then talk trash about, and this person obviously heard about it and was like, I'm out of here. This guy's the worst.
You're tripping, Mike.
It's just messy. All right. We were talking about where the Mariners are really excelling right now. Obviously, it's pitching depth with a breakout of Bryce Miller. He is so fun to watch, but there is one side of this game we're still waiting to show up. And here's the thing. If it does, this team can be scary. That's next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
You know, when we were talking about Bryce Miller earlier, we mentioned it's like cutting the head off the monster and then two more grow. That's how the pitching staff is. Oh, you lost a starter, your number two starter in your rotation? Wow, that's heartbreaking after you were so healthy as a starting rotation last year. Oh, just kidding. This guy came out and is now setting MLB records through his first five starts.
You just reminded me of a memory growing up. It was bad, right? So I used to live in San Diego when I was real young. and there are lizards everywhere.
I don't like it.
And we learned in school that a lizard will regrow its tail.
Mm-hmm.
So my cousin caught a lizard and
cut off
the tail of the lizard and kept them in captivity to see if the tail would grow back.
Did it grow back?
A little bit. We let it go after that.
But he had a little stump.
You just reminded me of that.
That's so sad.
It's dark, ain't it?
You know, I do appreciate that he kept him in captivity. Like, you know, is he maybe a psychopath? I don't know. I don't know. But he did keep him.
I don't know where that cousin is today,
look,
so I don't know.
He did keep him at least in a nice little safe environment to see what would happen. Yeah. So I don't know how much credit to give him for that, but I guess it's better than just letting it run into the wild.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the Mariners pitching staff, but imagine if the lizard grew two tails, you know what I mean? Like, all of a sudden, it's like the strongest tail ever, and you're like, wow, that's unbelievable. The pitching depth that this organization has is absolutely phenomenal. They have been, and this is hard to do, really consistent with bullpen production, and they've still dealt with some injuries, and then you just end up still having arms that perform and help you out, and the starting rotation is even more impressive, where you get Bryce Miller out here and he looks fantastic. They still have arms in their farm system, by the way. Emerson Hancock, not up here yet. You know what I mean? So they not only have great pitching, they've drafted, developed great pitching, and they have great pitching waiting. And it is never ending. They just keep hitting. And it kind of got me thinking, Bump, that like, if the Mariners' bats ever show up consistently, this team can be scary. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's like watching Bryce Miller, I just kept thinking, and I say this knowing that they got six runs yesterday, but I just kept thinking, like, God, if this offense could take off, this team is so well-balanced.
You need the Mariners to be the Baltimore Ravens. Got a good defense, right? Your defense is your pitching. All you need is just a little bit of help on offense. Nothing too crazy. You don't need 8, 9, 10 runs a game, but you need to be able to help them out. You look at the Mariners, just basic stats, right? ERA, they're number 3 in the league, 3.48, all right? Now you go over to the other side, the offensive side, the side where you got Trent Dilfer and the gang over there running this offense.
Oh, no.
All right, you look at their team. I call this team offensively a 20-something team because every category, they're around 20-something, right? You look at average, they are 24th. You look at on-base percentage, they are 23rd. You look at slugging, they are 24th. And then you look at OPS, they are 25th. Mm. They're a 20-something team on offense, but an elite team when it comes to pitching. I equate that to the defense because obviously pitcher has the ball in his hand, making guys whiff at these pitches. So I'm with you. If this offense could be a 15-something team, 16-something team, I think that'd help this pitching out tremendously. But here's the good thing. At this point of the season, I feel like with this staff, they are good enough to hold guys off a little longer until this offense gets rolling. Because that's all you need. Like, look, keep throwing jabs. Keep these defenses at bay. Don't make them just throw haymakers and knock us out. So with the rotation, with the emergence of Bryce, with Logan doing his thing, with Marco bouncing back and hitting his spots, with Castillo being who he is and Kirby, they're good enough to keep throwing jabs, to keep teams at bay. How long, we shall see. But as a hitter, and as they say, even a GM, a skipper, that has to make you feel like you're at least going to be in every competition you're in.
You're absolutely right. They are good enough to keep them in every competition. They are good enough to be that defense that's like, just get a touchdown and a field goal and you're good. Get 10 points, you're good. You're fine. It's so easy, right? Thankfully, they aren't as bad as Denver's offense was when they couldn't even manage that last year.
Right.
But they are going to need to be a little bit better. And I am eager to get out of this series against the A's, where they have been productive offensively, most especially in the first game, a little less so in game two, better in game three. Because the A's are a horrible team. And I know that we've been saying, like, a win is a win and you can still learn stuff. What I hope is that a lot of the things they were struggling with was for each of these hitters was maybe a little mental.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the feeling of getting momentum, even if it's a bad team, carries over into Pittsburgh. I like that there's a more gradual increase of difficulty. You know what I mean? That Pittsburgh isn't going to be as tough a team as will the Yankees be. So I'm eager to see them get out of this series and in advance and see what kind of offense they can carry over.
Yeah, it's kind of like when teams set their schedules in football, right? You set yourself up with... And we opened up 1 year with Grambling State, right? We knew we were going to smack those dudes. And then we went a little tougher. It was before Colorado was in the Pac-10 at the time. All right, now we got Colorado. All right, take another step. And then we open up with Oregon. Like, all right, now it gets real. We have two games to kind of prepare ourselves mentally for what's ahead. And that's how I look at the schedule, just like you mentioned it. You got the A's. All right, warm yourself up. Maybe get a sweep. Get two games above 500. All right, gets a little better with the Pirates. And then the Yankees are always going to be the Yankees. And this just allows guys to find their groove. It allows Caballero to reaffirm himself in this lineup. It allows Julio to find his swing and drive in a run. Even Haggerty is producing right now. So it's working out in their favor, all right, that they are one game above 500. We would like to see a bit more, but the next step. It's like playing, you ever play, I doubt you play this game, but Mike Tyson Punch-Out on Nintendo.
Of course, I was a huge fan of Mike Tyson Punch-Out.
Exactly. Your first few rounds are cake. You know the patterns of the guys, you're fighting, boom, 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 you knock them out. And then sooner or later, you're going to have to ask your cousin or your big brother, like, hey, man, come here and help me out with some tips. Big brothers Julio, France, Suarez, and Kelnick, the gang who's supposed to be driving and run. So, yeah, it's set up perfectly for who this team is in this moment.
From the 469, the Pirates are going to give the Mariners fits with that attitude, but they have some legit starters on this team. So I think it'll be one of those things where the pitching staff for the Mariners against the Pirates offense can probably continue to look really solid. Again, nothing's ever easy.
No.
It's never a cakewalk, but what we're going to see is, because the Yankees have a great pitching staff, is the offense just be more gradually challenged. Like, I think that what I want to see is a lot of the approach carry over. I mean, I want to continue to see fewer strikeouts, right? Like, God, you just can't continue to strike out 10 times a game, 9 times a game. Like, that's not sustainable. You can't do that.
No. And then against the Pirates, let's get through tonight, right? You got Gilbert tonight. Obviously, we want to finish the sweep. But then when you do line up with the Pirates, you got Kirby, you got Castillo, and then you have Marco. I like the way that lines up, man. Can Marco continue to do his thing? Castillo's shown that he can bounce back, and Kirby's just been Kirby all year. So no matter how you slice this rotation, you're going to feel good about the guys who are on the mound.
I also like the idea of, you know, for any of the discrediting that was given to Miller going against the A's twice, he's going to be going against the Yankees, I think. Will he be day three of that series?
So, yeah.
I think he's going to be on the 31st for that series.
He's opening up against these guys.
Opening against the Yankees?
Yep.
So again, like, what's that going to look like?
Let's
they got Aaron Judge back. They're up and down. They're having, for Yankees fans, a disappointing start, but they're solid.
Yeah.
So
always good. They spend money. They'll be fine every year.
Yeah, I know. We'll see what happens there. All right. One ESPN analyst ranks the Seahawks offseason in the bottom half of the NFL for a second straight year. We'll tell you about his reasoning next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
One ESPN analyst ranks the Seahawks offseason in the bottom half of the NFL for a second straight year. Why all the hate? Okay, it's not really hate. It's Bill Barnwell of ESPN, who last year had the Seahawks as maybe his worst offseason. And look, he wasn't alone there in doubting what the Seahawks could do with the quarterback competition between Geno and Drew. A lot of people looked at the Russell Wilson trade and said, John Schneider, what are you doing? This year, people now understand, they actually had a really good draft last year, and they got a few starters, and Geno ended up being a Pro Bowler, so let's see what they have in store. But ultimately, Bill Barnwell is a little bit nervous, and the reason the Seahawks are number 18 in his list of off seasons, because he thinks they still didn't do enough for the defense. And let's talk about whether or not we agree. So we'll start with whether we think the defense on paper can be better than last year. Bump, what do you think?
Most definitely they could be better. Mo better. They got better at corner, even though I love Mike Jackson. That is my guy. But now you got the number 5 pick, a guy who plays the game violently, has great instincts. You upgrade it there. Also, you bring in Bobby Wagner, right? I think this move doesn't happen if Jordan Brooks doesn't go down, but you still bring him in. You bring in Devin Bush. You got better at that second level. Jamal Adams is healthy. Quandre's ready to go. You get at the safety spot. Then you look at the defensive line. You bring in Jaren Reed. You got Dre Jones. And you draft Cam Young. Every position was addressed. Even a position I didn't think needed to be addressed was addressed, and that set that secondary, that corner spot. So I look at this defense and I go, yeah, you should be better with the development of Daryl Taylor. Hopefully he comes back and he's a bit more better than he was last year. Good for 9.5 sacks. Then you got Ajinna Nwosu on the other side. He's going to come back ready to go. He had 9.5 sacks. Boye Mafe is still going to develop. And I keep forgetting Morris from Michigan is on that line as well. They drafted him. I look at this defense and I go, there's no reason they shouldn't be better. And how hard would it be to be better than that defense from last year? I don't think it'd be that tough.
So he also looks at the offensive line. It will not surprise anyone that he's talking about the trenches. That's what Bump and I have been talking about all offseason as far as what they needed to address and where there were still some question marks. So no one's shocked by this. But he said another old concern is back. Is there enough along the offensive line? The Seahawks used 2 day 3 picks on linemen, but starters Austin Blythe and Gabe Jackson departed without significant replacements. And I know that they added Evan Brown and Phil Haynes, but he says of those two, look, they might be best as the sixth utility lineman on a great offense, but they're likely starters in Seattle. Meanwhile, running back Kenneth Walker's spectacular big plays were masked by one of the league's worst success rates. The line needs to do more to open up reliable holes for him and rookie second round pick Zach Charbonnet in 2023. He'd like to see more interior line depth.
What did you say yesterday? You made a good point about
a lot of great.
That's what you do. Mm-hmm. You talked about how the better teams have gotten a bigger return on their investments,
yes.
Right? I'm looking at this offensive line and saying you've already got a huge return in these tackles.
Mm-hmm.
You got Abe Lucas late, who no one really projected to be a starter. And you got Carl Strauss with that number 9 pick. Those guys played every single game, except maybe one. I think Abe Lucas was sick for a game. They played every single game for you. Now they're going into their second year. A couple years back, you get Damian Lewis. He's played down there every snap. And then what do? You go and draft Anthony Bradford, and you bring in Evan Brown, and you also draft a center. So I think he's looking because there's no film on these guys. There's no film on Anthony Bradford in the league. There's no film with Olu in the league. He's looking and saying, oh, they could be good, but we never really know. We don't know how that's going to pan out. Now, I don't know who is in charge of their scouting department when it comes to looking at offensive linemen, but whoever was in charge of that position last year did a heck of a job and found two guys. Can he run that thing back and get two more starters out of this? If not, you still have a veteran in Evan Brown who's going to be there and Phil Haynes. So I think this is a to be determined if how good this offensive line has gotten. But I love that they addressed it. And I think that we're going to see one, if not two, rookie start on that offensive line.
I think that the Seahawks had really big holes on the offense and defensive lines. And unless they took an offensive or defensive, like unless they took a center in the first round or a defensive tackle in the first round, they were going to leave with big question marks, mm-hmm. right? That was the only way. Taking Jalen Carter and taking a top offensive lineman or top center was the only way that for a lot of people, it would have felt like questions were answered. So of course they're entering the offseason with questions. Maybe Cam Young ends up being great.
Yeah.
Maybe Jaron Reed in his second stint with Seattle is fantastic. Better than he was in Kansas City. Better than he was in Green Bay. I think that, you know, unfortunately for this team, they're kind of at a place where they're at a baby step level. Like, I don't think you're going to go from 30th against the run to best team against the run.
No.
20th against the run is an improvement. It's not going to look impressive by the end of the season, but it's an improvement. 15th in defensive DVOA would be an improvement from 21st. It's not going to feel great. You're going to have bad games, but that's still an improvement. I don't think that they have enough to go from worst to first.
No,
I don't. But that's also not what people are looking for. So to Barnwell's point, he's looking at it from the stance of who's going to win a Super Bowl? Who's getting closest? I just don't think that's where Seattle is right now. They're working towards it.
No, I don't look at Seattle right now and say Super Bowl or bust. I look at them and say, all right, let's win a playoff game.
Yeah.
Let's compete for the division. You know, let's stay healthy. Let's have this offense duplicate what they did last year in some sense. Have a couple thousand-yard receivers and have a good run game, protect the quarterback. Let's have this defense make the biggest jump of all, stop the run, and cause more turnovers. So, yes, when you look at the Seattle Seahawks and you compare them to the contenders in this league, the Bengals, the Chiefs,
any team in the AFC, the Eagles.
You say, okay, they're a ways off, but are they better than they were last year? Yeah. And you know how this game goes.
Yep.
Guys get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Quarterbacks Things happen where things happen with them. So as long as you are moving in the right direction, you give yourself a chance. But it starts in the division. Compete in the division,
yeah,
and then you never know what's going to happen after that.
That's exactly right. We are getting back to the Mariners. So we're going to go four down territory. Patrick Mahomes leads off an interesting question about quarterbacks. That's going to be first down coming up at 11:15. Before we get to that, though, Ryan Roland-Smith joining us to talk about how the Mariners can try to get a little bit more balanced for the rest of this homestand. Don't go anywhere.